You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more. Hello and welcome to the show. Stu Goldsmith here today. I'm talking to Brian Simpson, a stand-up comic hailing from Austin, Texas, where we recorded this as part of this year's South by Southwest. Brian has recently released on Netflix his first Netflix special. It's called Live from the Mothership. It's taped at Joe Rogan's Club, the Mothership in Austin. And we are going to have a conversation which was curtailed slightly for reasons that you will discover. This is not quite as long an episode as we normally record for. There's no extra material for this one, but everything we do have is very good indeed. Brian is a really, really strong comic. He's got a real sense, a real knack for drilling down into the funniest possible bones of a topic, and he applies that to a wide range of things. With a background as a foster child and a Marine Corps veteran, Brian brings a very rare blend of life experiences and a unique perspective. He's very, very good. He got a spot on Variety's Top Comics to Watch in 2023, and you might recognise him from Lights Out with David Spade or from season 3 of Netflix's The Stand-Up. So very exciting to talk about his new special. In the first half of this episode, we're going to discuss anticipating the release of his Netflix special, which I think dropped about a week after we recorded. We'll talk about how Brian's ADHD affects his comedy, and we're going to reflect on some advice he's had from mentors, as well as learning to embrace discomfort. All good gear. If you do join the Patreon at patreon.com/comcompod, you get access to hundreds of hours of bonus features with the likes of Eliza Schlesinger, Nish Kumar, Lucy Beaumont. You'll also get to watch full episodes wherever possible, including James Acaster, last week's episode with Julia Masley. Thanks for your feedback on that, and brilliant Dara O'Brien. Don't forget, if you are an Insider's Insider, that's at the £5 plus tier, you can join me on Tuesday the 30th of April for a live Q&A, brackets fun title, details in the Patreon. And please be aware, this episode contains discussion of suicide, so please consider this your trigger warning. Here is Brian Simpson. So, listen, what we're going to do here is find out what makes you tick as a comedian, how you bring yourself to comedy. How's comedy treating you right now?
Oh, it's great right now. I have a special coming out on March 19th. Mm-hmm. So my first hour-long special on Netflix. Yeah, thanks. So it's a little like I'm tired of being pregnant. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
It's like I'm excited for what's coming, but I'm tired of waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the material on that show. Is that stuff that you've been working in for ages and you've kissed it goodbye? Are you happy to kiss it goodbye? Is it time for it to get out there and leave your grasp now?
Yeah. Because I was so, in the beginning, a lot of the times, you know, when you get that first A material, right? Like your joke that works all the time, you kind of, the reflex is to hold it precious, you know, so you don't want to waste it, you know.
Yeah.
And so this is the first time I've ever dumped an hour material, like it's gone, and I was afraid at first that I wouldn't be able to replace it easily, but I think freeing up that space, it just, you know, already have a new hour.
Yeah. You know? Right. Okay.
Yeah. So it's like it. You kind of have to trust your creative side to always, because what am I trying to say is there's always going to be this insecurity of maybe that was my last good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And that's just the cycle that I live in of like, well, it's been a couple months since I had a new idea. Maybe I'm out. Maybe I'm fresh out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, something hits you and you feel good. Like nothing in my whole life, in my whole career, nothing works better for mental health issues than a new joke that works.
100%.
Like I'm talking about, I'm like instantly feel amazing. It's better than I've tried 9 antidepressants. I've tried a few ADHD meds. I've tried therapy, yoga, meditation, fucking exercise, but all that shit pales in comparison to a new bit with legs. So it's you live in this constant state of like, oh man, I'm shit, I'm over, it's over, that's my last idea, and then, oh fuck yeah, something to look forward to.
Yes. You know what I mean? Now that, and when we talk about your bits as well, you, I mean, you're a beast of a comedian. Some of that stuff I've seen, I saw your the half hour on Netflix that you did for Netflix's The Stand-Ups. I've seen a bunch of your stuff on YouTube. And your bits, you are, like, you're one of those guys who gets a big idea, like a this is like this, racism is like herpes. Mm-hmm. You know, black people are treated like pennies in a store, and then you'll prove it six ways, and the audience will just be in the palm of your hand. So those bits... Are they harder to find, those kind of big ideas, than just like a joke, a smaller joke? Is it those bits that give you the most, like, where's the next one of them going to come from?
No, because they all started as a little thing. You know, because I'm very obsessive over the shit. Where it's like, I think the mistake a lot of new comics make is they work until it gets a laugh and then they stop working. But it's like it's more to that. You don't want to leave no meat on the bone. So you ever, I don't know if you're black people know this, but like you ever eating a piece of chicken and then you're done and then your grandma goes, that's not done. You know what I mean? And they crack the fucking bone open and suck the gristle out. And it's like, that's what I mean. It's like some people, you got to go till there's nothing left on the subject that hasn't been touched before.
So how do you get that? Can you give us an example of maybe like an early bit of material, something where you really embodied that idea for the first time that you went, that's a bit that works, and now I've got to suck out the bone marrow of that joke?
Let me see. Well, I cannot do that without giving away something in the special.
Like, can you throw away an early one, a joke from 10 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, okay, so if you ever saw my late night set on David Spade's show?
Yes, 100%.
Okay, so there's a whole bit about flat earthers, about half people that are halfway smart. You know what I mean? How they're more dangerous than stupid people, because, and that was just a thought that I had one day, like, you know, just from, I forget who I was dealing with that frustrated me, but I was like, you know what? People that know enough to think they know it all,
yeah,
that's way scarier than somebody that doesn't know shit, you know? And I kept working, and I was like, okay, well, what examples are there of that? Like, who are the stupidest people that are certain they have it all figured out? Flat earthers, you know? And then I started thinking, like, where does that come from? You know, and obviously this is all months and months apart. You know, it's like, well, where does that come from? Well, it comes from this sort of arrogance that we all have, because we all have power now. Everyone's more powerful than, like, the average person is more powerful than they've ever been, because you get to leave your opinion. So then it turned into a bit about reviews. About people get to leave reviews now, so you think that your opinion matters more, right? And now we live in a world where, like, you can read like three memes from Reddit and think you can debate somebody that has a PhD on the subject. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you think your opinions weigh the same, because they do.
And I think the first punchline in that bit, if I remember correctly, is about, not to murder the bit, but it's to point out, like, the flat earthers, their whole case is, it seems flat to me. Like, that's the first laugh in that section, right?
It seems flat from here.
Yeah, it seems flat from here. Forgive me. So was that the first joke of that bit, like, before it became a wider bit and about reviews? Did you
That was the last bit. That was the last thing that was the last thing I added, I think. Yeah, and it just came from ranting. Like, basically, I never sit down and go, like, oh, I'm going to come up with this grandiose idea. All my shit comes from the fact that I am mildly irritated with the world and everything about it, and I'm going to make my argument for why that's okay. It's like, I hate you, I hate them, I hate this about you, and either I'm just a curmudgeon or a cynic, or I'm onto something. And if I can prove I'm onto something, then it's funny.
That's such a core principle of like a really healthy approach to stand up. That's like a really good creative approach to stand up. Well, yeah. You could almost suggest that to a new comic as like, find a thing, find what you hate about it, dig into that.
Yeah.
But for you, do you think that's just serendipitous? Is that just lucky that you're that kind of person and you discovered stand up?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I think my brain is broken in a very specific way that just happens to benefit me.
Talk to me in detail about that.
Yeah, because okay, so a lot of people might not know this already, but I was a foster kid.
Yeah.
And very, very early on, I was diagnosed with ADHD, which I ignored. I took Ritalin for like a month or two, which was enough to do the damage. So now cocaine doesn't work on me. I don't know if y'all know that, but that's a thing. If you was on Ritalin, I was the experimental kids on the Ritalin. Yeah, cocaine just makes you feel regular.
Get all your accounts done.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's, right. No, it still has all the physiological effects. Like, you still, your heart rate and all that shit, it's still bad for you. But it doesn't make your brain, whatever makes people think they can start a business, it doesn't do that to you, right? But the ADHD, because I think sometimes when you go so long with undiagnosed mental health stuff, it's just like physical stuff. It's where it's like you get to the point where you don't even know which thing is causing your current issue. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like you can get fat and get overweight, and then you get diabetic. And then the diabetes causes high blood pressure. Then the high blood pressure causes high cholesterol. And, you know, the next thing you know, you're sitting there with chest pain, and you don't know if it's the diabetes or the high blood pressure or the, you know what I mean? Because you've been ignoring all of it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's like, I think I've just ignored the depression and the anxiety and the ADHD for so long that, like, it made my life so chaotic until I found stand-up. And then it was something to like pour it all, it's something to focus on. Because I'm not focused in any other area of my life. Everything is, my car is clean and my notepad is neat. And everything else is chaos.
So I have ADHD and I'm recently diagnosed, like about a year ago.
Oh yeah.
And diagnosed professionally by a doctor.
Okay.
So I know you have material how frustrating it is when people self-diagnose.
No, I get it, yeah, yeah.
And one of the things for me is, as an anxious person, I've always struggled with anxiety. And I do reflect now on how much of that is, like, I learned lessons. I went to therapy and I was like, oh, I'm being anxious because of this and this is a solution. And then, now I suspect due to my ADHD, I forgot.
Oh, yeah.
I learned the lesson, I just forgot about it.
So
I'd learn it again, then I'd forget it again. So there was like a sort of a comorbidity, you know, those things affected each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you find that?
Oh yeah, like you know, because what I discovered a while back about it, and this is how I'm able to function in this business, is that I need immediate consequences for me to focus. A lot of people think you're lazy, right, or they think you're some other thing, but it's really just that whatever process happens in a normal brain of this needs to get done next week. So I'm going to start on it right now, and there's a piece missing out of the chain, right? It's like, so like, I can do it if it needs to happen right now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as long as I'm going to get instant feedback from that, that's why I can't do my taxes.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I play video games because the gratification is immediate, right? And if it's not an immediate gratification, then I have a hard fucking time. That's why. So y'all don't notice I was late to this.
We said a technical issue because
I
didn't want to drop you in it.
I was late.
I mean, arguably, it's a medical issue, right? Yeah. You were like an hour late.
Yeah, I was late because someone else fucked up and didn't put it in my calendar.
Yeah.
And neither did I.
You have to rely on trusted systems,
I
right?
I need another person to put stuff in the calendar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because then I'll forget to do that. Yep. It was like, I need you to put it in my calendar. And then me thinking today was my day off. You know what I mean? No, seriously, like 30 minutes ago, I was sitting in my underwear playing Helldivers. You know what I mean? And then I get this phone call like, where are you? And you know, if you ADHD, you know that is a fucking nightmare. Women.
Yeah, absolutely.
You mean I got something to do right now?
Yeah. And for me, I collapsed in was like, I've fucked up again. Oh shit, I've failed. I can't fit in with the thing. I'm bad. I've messed up. You know, I have kind of those other things that happen as a result of it.
Yeah, adding emergency shit to the schedule is...
Yes.
That's a good way to fuck me all the way up, dude.
I'm so sorry. Thank you for coming, Brian.
It's not your fault.
No, I know, but I'm sorry. I feel empathy for the struggle of this. So when it comes to, you were talking about comedy and being able to pour yourself into it. I know that with ADHD, things that ADHD people seek out or are kind of almost like tools that you might be subconsciously using are things like novelty, danger, deadlines. Do you know what I mean? If something's boring and you can give it a deadline somehow, like shit, this has to be done now, then it becomes interesting enough that it activates your executive function and you can do it. And comedy, I think, does that for a lot of people. Like,
it's not about the deadline, it's about the results. Right? So it needs to be done now and now I can do it. It needs to be done now and the consequences of doing it or not doing it are also now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that's the only thing that motivates me. It's like right now, it's like my house looks like five homeless people are squatting in there, right?
Okay.
But if I thought I was getting laid tonight, it would look like nobody lives there. It would look like one of those show houses in the catalog. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
Is
there an equivalent of that phenomenon with your comedy and with your creativity?
Yes,
what's the equivalent?
It's the ability to trust my funny, if that makes any sense. So I write, like a half of my writing happens on stage. So I'll have an idea like that. Like, for example, the bit about, the part about it looks flat from here.
Yeah.
So I just said that on stage because I got to the point where like I trust that I'm funny. So if I'm just saying the truth and I'm just saying how I really feel simply enough, you know, half the time it's gonna be funny. And then the more you do it, that goes up to 60%, 70%, 80%. And stand-up itself is like the ultimate immediate consequences. People laugh or they don't laugh. And people don't normally fake it for you. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
you immediately, you say a thing, you know the response. That's why filming a special was so nerve-wracking for me because I filmed it months ago and I have to wait and wait and wait for the response.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, you had the response in the room, killed on the night, taped it, got it on tape, but what's the response out there going to be?
Right.
You can't do anything about that now.
Right.
That's murder. Yeah.
Right. Like, which Rotten Tomatoes reviewers are going to be my enemies for life?
That was just appropriately threatening enough to any potential reviewers. There was just an edge on that I enjoyed. So that quality of trusting yourself to be funny, that's something I think about a lot. It comes up a lot on the show. When did you learn that? How soon did you learn that? Because I think some people who learn that very early on in their career, that idea of, oh, I just have to, you know, it's like telling someone, hey, before a job interview, just be yourself, or before a date, just be yourself. And it's easy to hear, oh, be myself. And you can misinterpret that. You can go, oh, they mean be that version of the self that I present to the world that isn't really true. To actually learn through that and go, no, they say be yourself. They mean actually be your actual self. That's really hard to get your head around, let alone activate and do it in your life. I think it's the same in comedy.
It's like somebody telling you, pull your dick out and don't care who looks at it.
Yeah, it is like that. Yes.
Yeah. And it's tough to do. And honestly, I mean, there's a bunch of little bits of advice that I've gotten over the years. But I say the key piece to that for me came from, he's an American comic that actually moved to your side of the pond, Russell Hicks, you know him?
Yeah, I know Russell.
Okay,
I know Russell
so
well.
He's
fantastic.
A master crowd work.
Yes.
Guy, right?
Yes, and he's kind of picked that as his thing. He's like, I'm going to do just that.
But I started in the same scene as him in San Diego.
Oh, I had no idea. Okay.
And when I started, he was the man. He was like the guy, right? And I remember just asking him one day, like, how the fuck do you do that? You know? And he told me to start going up at like every other open mic and don't do any material. Just rant my way into my material. Mm-hmm. So like try to have so that helped me work on my transitions, and it also helped me like trust myself to be funny in between, like without, you know, the material is something I always got in my back pocket, you know.
Yeah.
But I know that I can just speak funny, you know. Like I didn't write any jokes for this, but we've gotten several laughs.
Yeah.
Just because I'm a funny person, you know what I mean? So and it takes a while to really drill it, but the evidence makes you believe it. Like the more you do it, the less afraid you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when how early in your career did you start to really understand that lesson? How early were you able to activate that and get to a stage where you're like, oh, hang on a minute, I can just do this?
Oh yeah, probably like 2 years. About 2 years, maybe a little less.
And did you feel amongst your peers at the time you could see other people who were doing that and you could see other peers of yours who were not doing that?
Yes. I mean, I could see the people that were working hard and I could see the people, because what does that even mean? Because I think some people think that just getting on stage is enough, because that's the advice you get.
Yeah, go up. Yeah, yeah.
But that's like somebody telling you to just go to the gym, but they don't tell you what exercises to do, you know? Yeah. It's like, what are you doing up there? You know, so, I mean, very early on, I had mentors and people that would, you know, tell me how to actually work. And the truth is, most of the work is offstage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, recording yourself, listening to it, suffering through the recordings. Listening for
that's so important, that bit of making really like is. You know, oh man, this next bit's bad. That's the bit you got to listen to. You got to go towards. You have to lean into, even though you're resisting. Yeah. I don't want to hear myself do that bit again.
Well, I got, you know what's funny too is I was I got some delusion put into me early on that probably made me more confident than I deserve to be.
Go on.
But so I started doing comedy because I used to. I walked into a bar one night and a storytelling show had just ended. It was this organization called So Say We All. They do this thing where like they have like a theme and regular people submit their stories, and then all these literary people like go over the story and tell you what to improve and all these other things. And then some night comes and you perform it for a crowd. Okay. And they sell out this bar every month. And I just happened to walk into this bar that was in my neighborhood that I never walked into before, and they had just ended the show, and I'm drunk, and I'm laughing and joking with everybody, and I'm so funny that the guy's like, hey, we've been doing storytelling for a long time, but we're going to try stand-up. Do you want to be on it? And I was like, hell yeah. So I got booked 3 months before I had done stand-up.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, their strategy is that they put you with a performance coach. So that's how they approached the stand-up. So they put me with this poet named Stacey Dyson. And I met up with her in a coffee shop. And I'd already had like a couple jokes that I'd written long before when I first wanted to do it. And she was like, okay, do your jokes for me. And I did the jokes in the coffee shop. And she goes, you're a natural. She was like, do it just like that. You're a natural. Don't change anything. And that...
How did you feel? How did you feel hearing that? That's what an incredible thing to hear.
I felt amazing. I started calling her the Oracle because I felt just like Neo when the Oracle told him. Because remember at the end of The Matrix when she was like he couldn't figure out, was she telling him the truth or was she telling him what he needed to hear so he would do what he needed to do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
Maybe she really thought I was a natural, or maybe she just knew that's what I needed to hear.
Yeah, the only thing that's going to get this idiot through it is if he believes in himself. Oh, maybe she was thinking that.
Oh, you know? Yeah. But that gave me a lot of confidence straight away.
Great.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I got lucky. I've had a lot of good mentors or people that just drop little jewels on me, and I always pick up the jewels. I write every advice I've ever gotten, I've written it down.
Have you encountered a bit of advice? Could you share with us a bit of advice which you believed and then tried it and then went, that does not work? Like, there's so many people who give you advice. There's some bad advice out there as well. What's the worst piece of advice you ever got?
The worst piece of advice I ever got was to not go by my real name.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And maybe that wasn't really bad advice.
What does that mean to you? Why would that one come up?
Because I never... when I first started, I was going to go by my real name, and then somebody suggested that I have like a funny name, you know, and thank God somebody else was standing right there and was like, don't do that. You know, because it was like, you know, and they argued about it.
What constitutes a funny name? What
like,
sort of thing?
Like a name that is a joke in itself.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
yeah.
I used to do comedy with this guy, he called himself Joe King.
Sure, okay.
You know, which is, okay, joking. Okay, your name's a pun. But it puts certain stigmas on you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like walking up there with clown makeup on or something, you know? And I just went by my regular name. Also, I'm lazy, so it's just easier.
You haven't got to remember a fake name.
Right.
Yeah, right.
My fake name. And it feels bad when people you've known for years find out that that's not your name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are some of your comedy superpowers and what are some of your weaknesses? What are the things that you find yourself doing that you recognize other people, like newer acts, you think they need more of that thing that I do? Like what's like, is it the angle of attack? Is it the diligence, the hard work on the jokes off stage? What's particular to you that you think this is a thing I can nail? And what's something where you think you see other people do it and you think, I wish I could do that bit better?
I think just digging deeper. Going, a lot of people, like I said, go for the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Which is fine if you're gonna go up higher and get the higher fruit too.
Yeah.
Right. But some people just settle for, like, don't settle for the weakest thing. Like I hate it when rappers do that. When rappers that can really rap, but they just settle for like the easiest thing to rhyme.
And what do you think? What is it about your personality that is particularly frustrated by that? Like, what I agree, that's frustrating. I don't lose a lot of sleep over it. Why does it nigger with you? What is it about your...
Because that's what's impressive about it. Like, this is not just comedy, but what's impressive, what makes you feel impressed, right? And being impressive is what elevates you from your peers, right? What makes you feel impressed about anything is how far away you see yourself from being able to do it. You know what I mean?
Think about that. How far away you see yourself from you being able to do it. Oh, you mean like the maximum that you could achieve?
Right.
Like that, like...
Like, I mean, what I'm saying is like, if you see somebody do a backflip and you're a gymnast, that's not that impressive to you. But if you're 350 pounds and you could never even imagine doing a backflip, you're like, holy shit, that guy's flipping.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So
that's why you're impressed with magic, because you don't know how it's done, right?
Sure.
It's the same thing. It's like, so to apply to the comedy, it's like, if you're telling a joke and I can see it coming, I can see the punchline coming, like I know exactly where you're going.
Yeah.
It's usually a joke that anyone could have thought of. It's a connection anyone could have made.
Do you have like a favorite bit of someone else's that you think, God damn it, I wish I could have got there? Or like that
all
skill?
All the time.
What kind of thing? What sort of thing do you think like, oh man?
Well, see, I don't want to ruin his bit, but yeah, well, those are the bits that really impress me. The ones that I absolutely don't see coming, yeah, that's what I get it. But like, the opposite end of that is like, I've never seen a good Anthony Weiner joke. Y'all know who that is?
Oh, yeah, was he the mayor or somewhere? Was he a politician?
He was
a congressman
that got caught sending dick pics to people. And like, actually, he didn't know. He thought he was sending a dick pic privately, but he posted it on Twitter.
Got it. Yeah. I remember this.
And his last name is Weiner, and of course, every amateur comedian.
That's the lowest possible hanging fruit, right?
Yeah, and it's literally the only joke that anyone's ever done about it.
Sure.
You know, and I never had a bit about it because I'm like, oh, everyone has had this thought. But that doesn't stop people from, you know, it's like, so if you go on stage and that's the bit, and there's nothing more to it than that, and you satisfied with that, I don't understand that.
Do you give, you mentioned briefly about your problems with mental health. Do you give yourself a hard time about your comedy?
About my comedy? What do you mean, a hard time?
Well, I mean, like, do you ever get the sensation that you're making your life or your creativity unnecessarily difficult for yourself?
No, I mean...
Do you know what I mean? Like, do you find yourself after a bad gig, like, being more than reasonably frustrated with yourself? Does it kind of key into your mental health struggles like
maybe
that?
In the moment, but not really, because... I've tried to get out of the habit of having feelings about my feelings. That's a waste of time. Because then you had a bad gig and now you're frustrated and now you're upset with yourself about being frustrated with yourself. And now you're sad because you got upset with yourself again. And so it's like you got to deal with all those tertiary and secondary feelings before you get to the actual issue. So, no, I just smoke some weed and go to sleep. if I've had a bad gig, yeah, but that doesn't happen that often.
Yeah,
like the bad gig to me is like when a lot of people don't show up.
Sure.
Not like, oh, I fucked up on stuff. Because how is that possible? No. If you pay to see me, it's gonna be a good show. If you had an open mic or something, then you rolling the dice. But like your expectation, if you didn't pay for a ticket, your expectations can't be that high. You know what I mean?
And what is there that, what is a tool that isn't currently in your comedy arsenal that you would like to have in there?
I know this will never be in there. I wish I was more physical.
Really?
I envy the comics that can be super physical. I wish that I could be more jokey joke. I envy... like the Mark Normans of the world that can just rapid fire joke. I can't do that. I envy those people. But that's about it. But I'm never gonna have the energy to, like, I'm never gonna leave my feet on
stage. Never gonna leave my feet. That's a great expression.
No.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at oseamalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
So this is Brian. In the second half, we're going to talk about how Brian perceives himself and his audience. We'll get some more insights into his writing process, and we'll talk about the therapeutic value and the healing potential of comedy. Remember, Brian Simpson, Live from the Mothership, is out now on Netflix, and he is regularly performing across the US, including a show at the Netflix is a Joke Festival next month. You can find all the dates at briansimpsoncomedy.com. He also has a podcast. Search for the amusingly titled BS with Brian Simpson wherever you get your podcasts. I mean, you get podcasts, right? And that's, you can find where you get them. Is that outmoded? Is wherever you get your podcasts an outmoded sentence? Because everyone knows where to get podcasts now. Who knows? You'd be amazed. You can follow Brian on Twitter and Instagram at BS Comedian. And you can't come and see Redacted at the Mac Festival in a week because it is sold out. So sorry. There are still some tickets left for Spoilers. That's Saturday the 4th of May at the McCunfliffe Comedy Festival at 8 p.m. in the school. And I'm also going to be at Wells. Couple of tickets left for Wells Comedy Festival, where I should be doing Spoilers on Saturday the 25th of May. I don't know if I'm telling you what I'm up to at Edinburgh yet, but I will be making a brief but impactful appearance at the Edinburgh Festival this year. So do me a favour, before I tell you exactly what I'm doing, I'll check whether I'm allowed to tell you. I probably am. Everyone's announcing things. Anyway, before I tell you what I'm up to, I will be there for just less than a week. So if you know of any particularly sparkling people who I have not yet done on this podcast, now, I don't mean your mates, I don't mean you, I mean people who every time you see one, you think, why haven't they been on the show? I can't guarantee them a place. Don't offer them one. But let me know. Get in touch, stuart@comedianscomedian.com, or you can get in touch via the Patreon and you or the Comedians Comedian Podcast Facebook group. Let me know who I should be seeing. I think I will probably... I'm going to try and be nice to myself this year. 10 shows. Is that fair? Already I'm thinking, like, I could do 5 a day for 7 days. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to see 10 shows. Who should be in those 10 shows? Debuts are good. If there's a debut by someone who you are like, this person is incredible. And listen, I need you to have high standards on my behalf, okay? There will be plenty of brilliant debuts there. There'll be plenty of debuts that aren't quite ready yet. Plenty of people who, you know, I often see people on social media going, this person is absolutely incredible. And I think that we all need to just calm down. You know when you see an open mic go, yeah, smashed it. And you go, well, I know what smashing it looks like. And that wasn't it. With that in mind, I am trusting you. I've got 10 slots. These aren't podcast recording slots, but these are the people I need to be seeing. I have never felt less connected to the comedy circuit. Having said that, I'm very excited to be gigging with Alan Davies at the Marlowe Theatre in Canterbury this weekend. And there are two acts on there I'm particularly looking forward to seeing. And who else did I see? Oh, I can't... there's two names I can't remember who I did at the Mac Gala at the Wales Millennium Centre. Both of them were newish to me and very exciting. So there's clearly lots of ace stuff out there. What debuts should I be seeing and what stalwarts, aging warhorses, have I yet to get on the show? Tell me who is doing exciting work that I should see. Thank you. That's all of that. A reminder that the Insiders Club has moved to Patreon. Full video episodes, extra content in video as well as audio, guest announcements, like getting in first to get tickets for sold out shows like Redacted, and new membership offerings, including the monthly Stu and A recording this Tuesday, the 30th, not this Tuesday, but this April, on Tuesday, the 30th. There'll be a live one. Details are in the Patreon. You can join me for that. That'd be fab. Let's get back to Brian Simpson.
So talk to me about your relationship with the audience. Who do you think you are to us when you walk on stage? Who do we see?
Man, you know what? That's a good question. And somebody else, that's some other advice somebody else gave me, is you have to be, this is more for acting, but it was like, you have to be aware of how people see you.
Yeah.
And I still don't really have it nailed down how I am seen. I'm real confused about that. But I figured out my demographic. It's people that have done mushrooms at least once. You know? So I think the way people see me is like, oh, that dude is kind of, you know, he's kind of in his own world, you know? And maybe he's smart, and I always look high, even though I'm not.
Oh, you always look high.
Oh, I'm not. Okay. I'm not high right now.
Sure.
I know, but I'm always accused of such. You know.
Like, I love that idea that they are people. Your demographic is people who've done mushrooms at least once. So they're like, it's, you know, you're not like a kind of stoner comic or that kind of thing. You know, it's, but there is that quirk. It's like it is a drawing people into your world kind of thing. Who are they to you when you walk out on stage? Do you care about them? Do you want to impress them? Or does that, do you know what I mean? Is it like, you know, some comics are like, they like to please an audience or they're angry with an audience or something. Do you have a kind of connection, on that connection?
No, I mean, it's a balanced thing. It's like, I want the audience to like me, but not at the expense of me approving of my level of authenticity. So it's like, I'm willing to reword something and re-communicate something, but I'm not willing to say that I didn't mean it or try to act like,
sure,
I meant the opposite. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And because the thing is, anything I say on stage is because I think it's funny. It may be what I really think. It may be what I, you know, I guess I really think most of the things. But sometimes I'm just saying something because I think it's funny. And if you don't think it's funny, I'm not going to back away. Like, I'm going to, yeah, because like I said, nowadays more people think they have more power over the environment. You know, I've had people scream out, no, move on, you know, fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's like, we're going to keep on hammering at this until you get it.
That's one of my bugbears in comedy. The heckler who you deal with is like the entitled heckler you deal with, and an attempt to move the thing on. They do that gesture. They go like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like that. Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ.
That's next subject.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, well, I practice this. So we either doing this or I'm leaving, you know?
That your opening line when you did, you mentioned that David Spader show. Your opening line is the what is the line about I'm not gonna help you find your dog?
Oh yeah.
It's like straight off the top, doesn't say hello. I love that. I love it when a comic doesn't say good evening or doesn't say how you doing or anything like that.
Oh yeah.
Straight into it. Like, just talk to me about that choice.
Oh, well, it's a waste of time. You only, because here's the thing about recording TV stuff is if you go over your time, then they decide what to cut.
Yeah.
And they aren't funny. So if you, I was like, I'm not wasting a second of this motherfucker. I still went over it, and they still aired the whole thing. Thank God. Shout out David Spade.
Yeah.
But it was supposed to be five. I think it was 6 minutes. But my point is, if you have to be very efficient. Also, that was my first thing. You know, my first big thing.
And is that right?
Oh man, if I had filmed how I was, and because I only had a week's notice.
Okay.
I had 5 days notice, actually. And the way I obsessed, and I was like, I'm squeezing every punchline I could possibly fit into this motherfucker. So saying hello, everybody, that was just never in the cards.
It's interesting, the comments under the YouTube video of that, yeah, I don't know if you're the sort of person who looks at the comments, or if, I don't know, it's the sort of person that's not
I'm the
thing.
Sort of person that looks at the comments and pretends like I don't read any of them.
Yeah, nice, thank you. I honor that brave admission. Yeah, I think we all are. The comments on that are like, holy shit, who's this guy? Where's he been all my life? Because that set in particular, is so densely packed where every bit is like one of those big archetype, like big point, big idea, big joke, like bang, 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 no air in it whatsoever. It's an incredible first main thing. So I'm very pleased to hear that you did put a shitload of work into it and decision making, what have you. Because like, one of the illusions of stand-up comedy is that we're just saying all this stuff for the first time. And I think one of the nuances of that is there are sometimes comics who have a sense that they meet the audience like, this is just me. And you never know with those comics whether there is work going on behind the scenes or not.
Yeah, well, you know, somebody told me when I first started, actually, I think this was Ralph Harris that told me this when I first started too. He said, the end goal is to be able to do a perfect impression of yourself.
Oh, I love that.
So even though I've said it 1,000 times, it sounds like this is the first time I'm saying it, because I'm doing a perfect impression of me saying it for the first time, right?
Yes.
That's the skill. I mean, other than the joke writing and all that other shit, it's being able to nail it every time, nail that impression every time, you know?
Yeah. That's great. There's a similar kind of sphere to that, something Bill Burr told me, which is, he said every comic has their persona down until the first time they set foot on stage. Like, you know who you are as a comic, and then you set foot on stage, and it's gone out the window.
Yeah.
You spend the next however many years trying to get back to that state, but be able to be that, to be able to be that when you're on stage, to take those obstacles out of the way.
It's something about that pressure, because I think we get used to it, and you don't realize. I wish we would do like a study where they would have you hooked up to all the machines and measure all your vitals, because they go through the roof when you step out on stage.
Yeah.
No matter how experienced you are, the adrenaline is real, man. And whatever else is happening in your brain. And so you have to learn who you are in that condition.
Do you, just to come back for a second to that mental health thing, I think the way you were portraying it before is that it, like with ADHD, for example, that's a separate thing. I know that isn't a mental health issue, but with your ADHD, when you're on stage, everything's resolved. You have the immediate feedback.
That's
who you are. You're in your flow state. Is that the same with your anxiety? Does it resolve your anxiety? Like, you're anxious before, and then you get on stage, the anxiety ends, you're in your happy place, it's okay.
I'm more impatient before. I'm anxious before because I want to get it started.
Yeah.
You know, but on stage, I'm perfectly comfortable most of the time. Except I don't like it when people I know are in the crowd and I can see them. Like, if my friends or family was in here, I would want them like somewhere in the back where I can't see their faces.
Why is that? Well, do you have any theories as to why that?
It knocks me out of the state, you know? It's like watching porn and your mother calls. You know, you're not going to be like, all right, Mom, and then go right back to beating off. Like, the mood's ruined.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
sure,
and so it's sure. like, I don't want to see, it's just a distraction. It makes my brain.
Porn analogy aside, that does interest me because you are someone who is very authentically yourself on stage. So that's interesting to me that it could get you out of, you know what I mean? If you're being authentically yourself, what does it matter if someone that you know from your personal life, if you see them seeing you? Do you know what I mean? There's kind of a conflict there.
Because then I'm thinking about them. It's not even that I don't want them to. It really has nothing to do with them in the sense that like I care that they hear what I'm saying. I mean, they're there, so I don't care if they hear me. But it's something about seeing their face that it's the ADHD shit. It's like a dog seeing a squirrel. It's just now I'm thinking about them instead of what's in my, you know, because it's a lot to hold in. I don't know if that's a good way of describing it, but it's like you're holding in like what's happening in the room, what she said 3 minutes ago, what the next bit might be, and then this happens, and you're connecting it to this other thing that you've been thinking about, and then you see your fucking aunt, you know, and all that's gone, and you got to get back to fuck. Where was I? You know, that's how it happens to me.
When it comes, and I'm aware as well, we're gonna do about another 15 minutes, and there's an opportunity for people to ask questions. If that's okay with you, Brian, we can take questions from the audience. I've got another question I'll ask now, but be thinking in the meantime, and then if you've got some burning issue, put your hand up. The next thing I was going to ask was about to come back to the writing. You do a lot of writing on stage. What does the writing off stage look like? What does that process look like? Is it just that you're doing the editing part of your stage? Are you ever kind of creating new starting points or like that?
Yeah, like if I go on a rant, I talk to myself a lot.
Okay.
A lot. Like
what does that look like? Just in the car or when you're walking around or in your house or like what?
Just whenever. Like whenever this is another piece of advice I got. It was like anything that makes you wanna kill someone or kill yourself, write that down, you know? And so if something in particular irritates me, I will start ranting about it just right. It's not even something I'm consciously doing. I just find myself doing that. And so the open mic starts in my head. And then if I think of a good point, I'll get up and go type it or pull out my tape recorder and record it right then and just write it out later, you know. Mm-hmm. I try to journal at the end of the day and read it in the morning. Anything that gives me ideas, or I replace a couple of my music listening sessions with my set. Like when I'm in the shower, I play my set.
Really?
Yeah. Just like background stuff. I'm not actively listening. If it's something I've heard before, I'm not actively listening, but I'm just waiting. Because you are listening, you know, subconsciously. And so it's almost like music, right? Yeah. Where you ever know a song so well that you start adding your own lyrics?
Sure.
It's the same thing like that. It's like you know your act so well that while it's playing in the background, something might pop in your head to add to it, you know?
Yeah. That's lovely. That's a lovely thought. I like that, like replacing the music listing.
Yeah, I think but here's the thing though. But like, if you're some young comic, don't listen to me. Like, you have to find your own way to obsess about whatever the fuck it is that is your passion. You have to find your own way to just be obsessed. You know, there's a million techniques that you can use to make sure that you are putting, that you have a controlled crazy that you apply to your passion. You know what I mean?
That's really well put. And something I think is clear just talking to you is the amount of, when you say a lot about techniques, I feel like you have invented for yourself or kind of curated some really effective strategies for getting the most out of your creativity.
Well, that's the thing. Maybe they're all useless. And you know what I mean? Maybe they don't do shit, but they make me feel like I'm working.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I'm sure they are effective. I don't know if they're essential. There may be some better way to do it.
Maybe it's just a case of that's what locks you into your most confident creative state.
Right.
Because maybe it's just like having your magic button in your pocket.
Yeah, exactly. Well, something like that.
Placebo. That's not an expression, by the way.
But that's why I said that. You have to find your own way
yeah, yeah.
to put yourself in them in your own like obsession.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. Thank you. So we've got an opportunity for some questions here before we wrap up. If anyone has any questions for Brian, feel free to put a hand up. There is human.
This guy's got a question. Stop bullshitting.
Yeah. Is that a great question. If you could fill a room with the perfect audience.
Did you see how insecure he was about asking that question? He's like, oh, maybe I have a thing to ask. And then he asked the most.
That was an incredibly erudite,
right.
Fascinating question. So if you could create, just for the recording, if you could create the perfect audience, what would you populate in a room?
The perfect audience. I would clone my mother, my uncle, and my family. I would just repeat the same 10 people from my family, and I would just fill the whole fucking room up with them.
That's beautiful.
That's the challenge. Yeah, no, but you thinking all of them love me. Half of them don't like me at all. So it would be like the perfect mix of like people that know me well enough to have good reasons to love me and know me well enough to have good reasons to hate me. And if I could get them all to laugh, that's the ultimate.
That's great. And that, well, that speaks volumes to me, is like, create your perfect audience, and your answer includes one that would also be a challenge.
Oh, yeah.
That's very good. That's very good. Thank you. Great question. Can we give a round of applause for this?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Thank you. You have now passed through the membrane and you're now allowed to visit other comedy experiences.
Right.
Anyone else? Yes, over there. Your comment is it's a very linear conversation for two people with ADHD. Thank you. I'm working quite hard up here. I don't know about you, Brian.
Yeah, well, I'm also a narcissist, so the fact that it's all about me makes it way easier.
Yeah. Was there a question on the end of that observation?
An irritable guy? I don't seem like an irritable guy. You know, I don't know why, because I'm not doing anything to soften. I wear it. I think it's just because I'm still happy, you know. I mean, right now I'm not currently being irritated, so that helps. But I don't know. I forget who I heard say this. It might have been Seinfeld, but like I think there's anger underneath all comedy. You know, even the most joyful motherfucker you think is. They're still if you really listen to what they're saying, they're still pissed about something. So maybe this is. I don't walk around like spreading negativity. You know, but I bottle a lot in. I bottle a lot of my irritation because nobody wants to hear you bitch all the time.
So yeah. Well, I mean, you've created a way to bitch specifically.
Exactly.
Yeah. Does it have? I was going to ask. Does comedy have any kind of therapeutic, cathartic value for you?
Yeah, it can be cathartic.
You've alluded to trauma. You've alluded to. You know, having foster care.
Yeah.
And I know there's that. I mean, that amazing routine about the difference between the Google and the Reddit adverts, which I won't spoil here, but it alludes to Googling.
Oh no, you can spoil that.
Yeah. So okay. I mean, fucking, it's a great bit.
Yeah.
So you're talking about Googling how to kill yourself, mm-hmm. and Google won't tell you. So you go to, it won't tell you. It's one of the, it just gives you advice, ring this number. And then the rest of the bit, allow me to butcher it, is going on Reddit. And Reddit will be like, oh, that's easy. So what you do is, and then it says what you need to do is was it a Toyota Camry?
Right.
And you need to, you know, put a hose on whatever. And then you go back to Google, and the next page of Google, it advertises a Toyota Camry. And you're like, I fucking see what you're doing here. What a bit.
It's a good bit.
It's a good bit. But I listened to that bit and I laughed and I was like, that is such a good bit. And then I stopped and I was like, that's the premise of that bit is you're Googling how to kill yourself. That's a dark premise.
But that really happened.
My assumption is it did really happen.
Yeah.
And the way that you're like, if we talk about catharsis, does that joke allow you to process it? Is there something positive about that?
No. And I wish this idea would stop in comedy. Comedy is not therapy. If you need therapy, go to therapy. comedy is cathartic in the sense that it signals that you are through or almost through something. But I think you got to get through it before you can really make it funny, right? And maybe working your way, you know, maybe you can work through it a little bit. Maybe you can get some of the way with stand-up. But yeah, don't do that to crowds standing in front of people working out your fucking problems. It's like that you're because you, like, have you ever been at an open mic or something like that, and you see a comic on stage and they're ranting about their relationship, like mm-hmm. they're ranting about their ex, mm-hmm. and what they're saying to you is that they're over it and fuck her and blah 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 blah, but what everyone in the room is thinking is, oh, he's still hurt.
Sure.
Right, and that's what I mean. Is like when you try to work out your trauma before it's really funny to you, you are in one of the worst positions you can be in comedy, and that is when the things that aren't being said are louder than the things that are being said. You understand what I'm saying? It's like what I'm speaking right now is you're picturing it in your mind. Everybody here is thinking what I'm saying. But if I started. If instead of thinking about what I'm saying, y'all were thinking, damn, he really is trying to fucking hide that he's this or that. It's like, you don't want that. You don't want you've lost the crowd immediately mm-hmm. by being fake. You're pretending like you're healed when everybody sees you bleeding. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, that's a waste of your time and their time. Go see a professional or get on medication or do mushrooms.
And also, I mean, often it's the reverse is true. I think a lot of the time, doing comedy and receiving a massive hit of endorphins and dopamine and the love of some strangers can have a negative effect because it stops you getting proper treatment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can fuck yourself up doing this. Like, you still have to take, because I made that mistake as I focused so much on comedy for the first like decade. That I was ignoring everything else, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is addictive. It does light up all of your ADHD. The dashboard is like this. Completely allows me to obsess about it and put myself in it.
Right.
And you can exclude other things that you shouldn't exclude.
Now, does comedy help? Does comedy help audience members that are going through that thing?
I would say certainly.
Like, you've been traumatized, certainly. You heal, you make a joke about it. Does that help the person that hears the joke?
I think that's definitely possible. I don't think you can rely on that happening, but I certainly have heard, there are bits that stick in my mind still where every time the same negative thing happens to me, I kind of go, it's just like that bit, isn't it? Like that bit. It reminds me that an experience is universal. Do you know what I mean? A comedian took a risk on explaining their really, something that they really, after they dealt with it, they'd written some joke that really, really kind of nailed a topic. And like I have a line, it's probably one of my favorite lines I've ever written, which is saying to your, in an imaginary situation, saying to your child, you don't realize this, but you have stolen from me even the luxury of suicide. Right? Thank you. And I'm very proud of that line.
That's some cold shit to say to a child.
Yeah, well, it's not an anecdote about a time I said that. It's an anecdote of saying that. It's like an act out. I have had so many parents come up to me and go, fucking yes, it's like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's very satisfying because that is born of Jesus Christ. I mean, that was some hard yards in parenting, you know, two young children.
Oh, yeah.
And having genuinely had that thought, like, I can't even fucking kill myself because... Do you know what I mean? Because I would leave you without a parent.
Then you'd be somebody else's problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, that's another layer. Yeah. Yeah. So I've certainly had people, parents kind of go, fucking thank you, that nailed it. And I have experienced that about other people's stuff as well. Especially when some of the topics that you're talking about, that thing about, you know, black people are like pennies. Do you know what I mean? Everyone has to accept us, but if a bunch of us turn up at a shop at once, do you know what I mean? Like, everyone's like, what is this bullshit? You know what I mean? Like, that's a fantastic bit. You're also making, like, a cathartic point that one could imagine someone listening to that going, fucking yes, it is like that, and I appreciate you saying so.
Y'all gotta go watch this shit. It's dope. It's out there right now.
Cause Netflix.
Some of them are hearing this for the first time.
I'm sorry, well, you basically gave me weapons free on that so I've just been sitting here reciting your act.
None of this is in the special, by the way. So the special is on March 19th. The half hour is already up, which he quoted that joke from. No, actually, that's from the David Spade.
That's from the Spade.
Yeah, so there's a thing on YouTube, Lights Out with David Spade. That's a 5-minute joint. Watch that. It's a half hour on Netflix called The Stand Up, Season 3. There's another 10-minute bit on Netflix with David Letterman, That's My Time. And then there's an hour coming out on March 19th called Live from the Mothership.
And we can see that on Netflix.
And you can see that on Netflix.
Thank you so much. Brian Simpson, everybody.
So that was Brian. A quick reminder, you can watch Brian Simpson live from the Mothership on Netflix, and he'll be at the Netflix is a Joke Festival, as will such folks as Brett Goldstein and I believe Mae Martin's there as well. And I'm particularly excited in Nick Offerman and Friends versus the Climate Crisis. I think Mae's doing that as well. So if you are privileged enough, or indeed if you are, I don't know, you committed some sort of crime in a previous life and are confined to LA, that's possible too. Get yourselves along to that. Don't miss Brian. He's so worth seeing live. And a lovely little shout out there for Russell Hicks, friend of mine, friend of the pod. Really nice to hear a kind of back in the day, me and Russell Hicks kind of a story. If you're not following Russell Hicks, you should be. He is doing some amazing work. Follow his Instagram. I guess he's probably on TikTok as well. Who isn't? But Russell is really leaning into crowd work. That sounds bad. I feel like crowd work's a dirty word these days. But what Russell is doing is not simply crowd work. He's just following the line of thought. You remember, now I'm excited. I'm going to see Tommy Tiernan tonight here in Bristol with Eleanor Tiernan in support, who I gigged with recently and who's doing some brilliant stuff. You remember when Tommy was on this show years and years ago, he was at the time at Edinburgh doing a show where the promise was nothing he'd ever said before every night. So it was completely improvised. It's more like that kind of thing Russell's doing, and you should see it. So anyway, hello, Russell. And always exciting to see what you're up to. God, why do I sound like Smashy and Nicey? That's just what happens to people when they talk in a room on their own. So love to Russell and great to see you. What the fuck am I doing? Anyway, I think what it is it's the inherent disingenuity it's trying to fill two roles at once. Here's how I'd speak to Russell if he was in the room with me now. Oh, mate, yeah, I love your stuff. I can't even do it. I can't even fake it. What would you say? Like, I'm trying to have the relationship with you whereby, here's the relationship to you. Fucking hell, you should see Russell Hicks. He's really great. Here's the relationship to Russell. Nice work, man. And I can't do both at once. And that's why I end up sounding so false. Oh, God, that's in my head now and I never get rid of it. Thanks a lot, Russell Hicks, you prick. Right. You can go to patreon.com/comcom. You know that. Oh, this is important. Listen, if you're a member of the pod, if you're an insider via Orsound, Moonclerk or PayPal, your unique feed will stop being updated after this episode. This is the last episode. You have to quit out and rejoin via Patreon. You can check your emails for more details on how to do that. If you think that might be you, but you haven't had an email, get in touch with me, stuart@comedianscomedian.com. Thank you to everyone who has already made the switch over. Thank you to those of you who have been supporting since the PayPal days, in particular. And I think there might be like one person left on Moonclerk. Can you come off Moonclerk? I think it's costing me more to subscribe to than I'm making from you. So just bin that. Basically, I might just turn that one off myself after this episode. But the point is, the feeds are all stopping being updated. So please switch over to the Patreon when you can. Join me at Mac on Saturday the 4th of May for Spoilers, the award-winning climate comedy show. And thanks to our insider producers, Keith Simmons, Glenn Tickle, Sam Allen, Jay Lucas, Gary McClellan, Dave McCarroll, Miles Walsh, Nick Waite, Andres Perday. I'm sorry I can't do your gig, Andres. I'm going to do a post on LinkedIn about why not. It's not about you, it's about carbon. Caroline Schmidt, Jonathan Stewart, Richard Lucas, Paul Swaddle, Alex Wormel, James Burry, Ashley Stewart and Mike Sheldon. And thank you as ever to our special insider executive producer, Neil... All the feels, Peters. Bye for now. Oh, no, not bye for now. Stick around for a post-amble, but otherwise, bye for now. I've got 9 minutes in which to record it, and it'll take less than that. Here are... I can't do another I'm back on the horse. I'm writing new material stuff, even though I am. I wrote a fucking bit yesterday, about scopes. About how to explain scopes 1 and 2, 3, which are carbon emissions, basically. They're different ways of, like... Scope 1 is... I wrote a funny bit about this. This is the not funny bit. Scope 1 is your direct emissions, scope 2 is your indirect emissions, and scope 3 is the broader environmental context. Sort of. But I wrote jokes about it. I wrote jokes about it that sort of fit into Spoilers. I'm very proud of that. I'm ticking over. I'm approaching tick over. I'm approaching, like, there's a bit, here's a little bit. And I tell you what, I have not missed the... Which way round to say this? When I was writing Spoilers and learning to make the climate crisis funny, there were some wonky moments in gigs there was a certain amount of learning how to make that palatable, let alone funny. Learning how to even be able to broach the subject before it even got funny. And I've really enjoyed in interviews looking back on how tough those gigs were. And now I'm like, oh, I'm doing some of those tough gigs again. So that's a fun thing. But the other thing I wanted to talk to you about was, have you noticed, you won't have noticed this, I've noticed that I've become way more productive. I'm back on my book bullshit, and I've had like 4 3-hour sessions on it recently. I'm about to go and have another one after my final ADHD coaching session, and those have been so good. I feel so privileged to be able to get access to the funding that enables you to pay for the ADHD coaching, because the person I'm doing is not cheap, and it's being paid for, and I'm so grateful to it. So if you want to find out more about funding for ADHD coaching and help and stuff like that, then maybe hit me up, or plan to, and then don't get around to it. That's also an option. My point is, the back end of all of this has changed beyond recognition in the last 6 months. I'm still wibbling all over the place and going, oh Christ, only 7 minutes left in which to record this. And I'm already late for my ADHD coaching thing. It's my last one and I haven't done my homework for it. And I'm not, because I'm doing this instead. But that's a choice I've made for you. But even though it may not sound like it's changed, it really has changed. One of the changes is I've always, up until this point, tried to get back to all correspondence. I can no longer promise that I can get back to all correspondence, and that's fine. And I feel okay about it. And I don't feel okay about it. But decide is a derivation of a word meaning to cut off. So to make decisions, you have to cut things off to get any fucking thing done. I can't just be giving in every direction. So, so sorry if you've been in touch recently. I will eventually get... No, stop promising. I may eventually get round to replying to you. I try to reply to everybody. I cannot guarantee to reply to everybody anymore. Is that okay? That's okay, isn't it? You don't care. None of you are listening. Hello, the three of you. anyway, so that's that final session. It's been great. Asking for help is good. Ask for help with stuff. I can't ask for help with this next bit because it's just me, but the fucking book, oh my sweet Christ, it is simultaneously so exciting and completely mountainous and unfinishable, and it makes me want to... The last session, I had 3 sessions of like, oh my God, I'm making progress, and the last one was trudging through treacle thinking, how is this even possible? It's 130,000 fucking words. That's too many words. Is there... Can I use some sort of program to remove every alternate word? Would that work? Halving the size of the book at a stroke? Maybe it's 2 books. I can't bear to do it again. It can't be 2 books. I can't unthread them. And it's too big and unwieldy to put... Like, it occurred to me to print it out. I think it'd be 400 pages. I could buy an entire... How many pages do you get in a... How many pages? It doesn't say. 500 sheets. Okay. That's a lot of toner. I'd have to change the toner, and I'm unwilling to change the toner now that I've got a laser printer. I don't understand it. Feels a bit too much like changing the ink. But 500... I couldn't read 500 pages. But what I could do is print it all out and then just throw them away as I go, forget it, or that's good, or cross them out in red or something. But then when I've done that, then I've created an administrative job whereby I've then got to go back to the document in Scrivener and cross out all the stuff. How is this possible? With good help and patience is the answer. So I will return to being patient and having good help. This is a nothing burger, what this is. I don't understand what a nothing burger is. I think this might be a nothing burger. any other business? God, I've even got a file. I'm creating a separate file of all the bits I'm cutting out of the book. Maybe I could do the book, and then I could do the book, brackets, the cutting room floor. Strictly for the fans, a PDF of all the bits that I couldn't fit in. Maybe I'll do that. Then I won't feel like when I'm cutting stuff, I'm cutting it. I'll just feel like I'm putting it in a separate thing. The director's cut. The bad author's cut of the book. That'd be good. Here's a thing. I might turn this into content. I did a tech, yes, 2 days ago, I did a tech for an online remote gig I was doing, a climate gig. And I don't have PowerPoint. I pride myself on not having PowerPoint. But the way that the tech person said it was, now, am I right in thinking, Stu, that you don't have any content? And I was like, you're fucking right there, buddy. The other and final thing was, don't lose it now. That was the book. That was the things to do list. Oh, this was it. I got invited to do a gig in... I should tell Andrus this before I announce it. I'll try and text him now. Apologies, Andrus, if you hear this and I haven't yet texted. I got invited to do a gig in Estonia, and I love Estonia, but it's... That's my timer. But it's two flights to get there and two flights to get back, and I couldn't justify the carbon. And that's the first time I've done that. That's the first time I've declined a gig based on the carbon and, like, you know, the emissions. And I thought lights would go off. I thought I'd feel good. I didn't feel good. I'm sorry to miss the gig. I feel like I'm grudgingly doing the right thing, but it was a new experience. There we go. I'll flesh that out into some content and put it somewhere. But do you know what I mean? I was sort of hoping... Ta-da! I was hoping I'd be like the clouds would part and a golden ray of light would come down on me and go, you are doing the right thing. But of course, all that's happened is I've had to decline a gig I wanted. But I think it was the right thing. Yeah.